Good. You know, I was at KatsuCon, but I got back from my trip from like KatsuCon on the East Coast yesterday, finally. So
cool.
I'm just getting settled in back on the West Coast. And other than that, I mean,
you got back pretty late, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was at my trip back from the East Coast.
Yeah.
Was my first flight was at 6 a.m. So I had to get up at 4 a.m. East Coast time, which is 1 a.m. West Coast time. So I just had a very long day yesterday.
Gotcha. Oh, so yeah. I'm pretty bad at intros. So I should introduce everybody that's listening on the podcast right now. This is Steph or Stephanie Stone Cosplay. Thank you for coming on the podcast. I really
thank
appreciate
you for
it.
Having me. Yeah.
So you just got back really late yesterday. And how many hours did you sleep?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know. I mean, I was napping throughout the day, but last night I think I passed out. And I normally stay up kind of late, but I mean, I slept until 9-ish and then I was like up for a little bit. Then I wound up passing out for a little while.
Okay.
But so I don't know, like 8 or 9 hours of like sleep. And then I was napping a whole bunch yesterday as well.
Oh man. Okay. Did you sleep on a plane at all or probably not?
Oh yeah.
Oh, did you?
I did.
Oh.
I was so exhausted. I mean, like most of the time, like when I was flying over there, I didn't sleep at all on my plane ride over there, but coming back, I think because conventions and everything are so exhausting, it was like, I had no choice. I was passing out no matter what. I was so tired.
Yeah, man. It's I can imagine like just, I mean, after cons, everyone's just so exhausted from, you know, I'm sure on Thursday, you know, you've seen that meme where it's like on Thursday, the first day you're like looking great and everything. But then by the end, you're like a homeless person or something like that.
Yeah, like that's haggard. A very relatable mood. Yeah, I feel like especially with KatsuCon coming from the West Coast, the time difference is the thing that gets me the most. So I stayed up super duper late on, I think it was Thursday, until 9 a.m. on Friday. So I didn't even get outside of my hotel room in cosplay until like 6 p.m. on Friday, which like on the West Coast, that's only 3 p.m., which isn't terrible. But 6 p.m. was like, most people are changing out by 6 p.m. on Friday. So
Right.
I was very tired adjusting to East Coast times.
Oh, I can imagine. So you got jet lagged then? That's what happened, or
a little bit. I was also staying up with my boyfriend until that time. So
gotcha.
And because his flight was in the morning, and then we were just like, well, let's just stay up. So
let's just stay up. Don't sleep.
We're like, okay. So I mean, it was interesting because that was like unique because since we were just kind of wandering in the convention center, we actually got to see KatsuCon come alive Friday morning, which was something I never got to experience. And there was like, pretty sure there's no other way I would be able to see KatsuCon at 7 or 8 in the morning. But like people go hard there. I don't think any other convention has like that much bustling activity at like 7 or 8 in the morning.
Was it really that busy in the morning?
Because like we stayed up and then we were just like hanging out in the lobby, and then because he had to leave at 8:30 to go to the airport, but even just sitting in the lobby by 8 o'clock, there's like a fair amount of people around. I saw, you know, Charles Land.
Yeah.
I saw him like sitting around waiting for a shoot already, and I was like, oh hi, because I had seen him like hours ago in the night, like shooting in the evening, and then so I saw him again, and I hadn't slept, so I was just kind of like, oh hey.
Man.
Later. Yeah. And then, I mean, we were just sitting on the lobby level, but it sounded pretty busy on the gazebo level. Like, we couldn't see since the gazebo level was one level above us. But from, like, you know, the echoing din of the overall Gaylord Hotel, it sounded like there was already a fair amount of people out and about and doing things.
Yeah. For those who don't know, KatsuCon is held at... I think it's Washington, D.C. Or Oxon. I think Oxon Hill, right?
It's Oxon Hill, which technically I think is Maryland, but it's like right next to Washington, D.C. It's like within 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's part of that DMV area, if you will. Yes. I think it's probably in the middle. I'm not sure. I'm not from there. But so KatsuCon's held the Gaylord Hotel and a resort, I think. And You know, Kotsukan specifically has been known for the, I think some people unofficially call it the Gazebo-kan or Gazebo-kan or something like that. And yeah, and
they, I'd agree with that.
Yeah, and because people really like that gazebo. It's fairly small. In the pictures, people make it look a lot bigger than it is. But, you know, I'm surprised a little bit that, like, people line up for it. And they, you know, I think they kind of section it off nowadays.
Yes. Yeah, they do. They section it off. Last year, they had a line for it, I believe, and this year they had a sign-up sheet for it.
So so they
which is intense. You would, I guess, leave. I don't care about the gazebo hype and all that stuff.
Yeah,
but I think my friend took a picture in it because she said she was the one who told me that there even was a sign-up sheet, and I'm assuming you just leave, you know, like your name and number, and then they let you know when it's your turn.
I mean, but how they're gonna know? That means they have to have someone to manage it and all this stuff. And
I'm pretty sure they assign con staff to it now because so many people would go just for it. It's sectioned off, so you have to have a convention badge. Like, it doesn't matter if you're staying at the hotel; you have to have a convention badge in order to access that area. And then I think this year they also, they didn't allow people behind the gazebo too because like they were taking it like so officially that they were like, this is a officially sectioned off like area. No one can pass through like behind it.
Really? So there weren't people shooting kind of, I mean, to kind of give people an idea that haven't been to Kotsukan, like the gazebo's kind of towards the ledge of that floor. And then on the opposite end, there are these kind of white walls that people shoot at and do photo shoots at. And then I think there's some double doors that you can kind of go inside and also shoot there sometimes. I don't know if that's changed this year. So you're saying people are being told to leave
In that area? More so like between like the railing and behind the gazebo, because, you know, some people would pass behind the gazebo in order to get around the craziness, but that entire section by the gazebo,
that side, I see.
Yeah, they had it like completely, they taped I think like on the floor, no one's looking at the floor, there's so many people, but they had stanchions blocking it off. The area with like the doors and stuff like that was still, you know, open to everyone and people could shoot there, you know, if you could find room, but they Kotsukan staffing did not section that off.
That's kind of crazy. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, it did it. So, how many? Wait, is this your second, third time at Kotsukan?
This is just my second time.
Your second time. So last year was your first time there.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Did you? I didn't go this year, so. You know, I'll definitely ask you like what the differences were, because I went last year and I think did you think it got bigger? Did anything change in your mind, or what was different from last year?
I mean, there were things different with me going into it because like I had no idea what to expect when I first went last year. So going in this year, having like an understanding of how it went changed a lot of things for me, because last year when I first went, I didn't know what to expect. And I was honestly super overwhelmed.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, I was a lot more relaxed, knowing exactly how hectic it was going to be, because I wasn't prepared for how hectic Kotsukan was. So that was very different. Convention wise, like I was saying, the gazebo stuff was pretty different, the way that they were managing it. I did feel like there was a lot of people, I don't know how much of it was that there was a lot more people inside, because this year, was colder than last year. It was pretty freezing. It was extremely windy. That was different weather-wise. Talking with a lot of friends, it seemed like a pretty similar consensus of the convention is really pretty, and there's a lot of really great photo shoots, but it's freezing outside. So that was one thing. Two things that I felt were like very distinctly different about the convention this time. I actually wound up ghosting it for my first time ever. I didn't purchase a badge, but part of that was influenced by, I heard it was absolute chaos on day zero when people were collecting their badges or picking them up. One of my friends who went to go get his, the registration line, there were supposed to be two, and I guess they merged into one, and the staff just sort of gave up.
Managing it?
Yeah, which is pretty unfortunate. Yeah, he walked over there and he tried to ask like a con staff member, like, is this supposed to be two lines? Like, what's going on here? Yeah. And I guess the staff member was like, yeah, it's supposed to be two lines, but, and they just kind of shrugged because I guess there's nothing
nails it
questionably that they could do about it. I mean, it's their job, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
But it was super chaotic. So the way that they resolved this apparently was that they made everyone that was registering or getting their badge go outside. And like, so, I just mentioned, it was freezing.
Yeah.
So I know some people were really upset. You had to, if you were picking up your badge, you had to go outside, wait. And if the line extended that long, you would wait outside in line to come inside to get your badge. And that was the only way.
Right. Plus it was cold and people were in different cosplays potentially.
Yeah. And it was windy. So wigs, you know, were getting blown everywhere. The wind on the East Coast is more ferocious than the West Coast, in my opinion, at least in the days that I was there. It was very strong.
Yeah.
Definitely. So that I was like, well, you know, I don't need a badge. I
don't need a badge.
Borrow a friend's to just check some things out. But
I mean, I know that they were pretty, my understanding last year, like they were pretty hard on like checking badges and all that stuff. But then, like you mentioned, a lot of the, I guess the logistics, right, of getting your badge or getting to panels were not handled as well. I mean, but I think that's just like, I wouldn't say it's criticism, but I think that's just an issue with a lot of cons, I think, generally speaking, like, especially bigger ones, you know, like AX, like, I can imagine, like, I know last year AX, right, there were, I think there was the, was it the My Hero Academia movie?
Oh, yeah, I remember
the
hearing,
Bunny Senpai
like,
movie, where, like, people, they're, like, I this is just here, all hearsay, of course, but hearing from people that had tickets or got in line, I think they were locked there. I guess they were capped out at a certain number, but then I guess they had too many people to fill it, even though.
What?
You know, yeah, like,
that's
even
silly
though,
that they would miscalculate like that.
Right. So stuff like that. And I mean, I guess with that kind of stuff, it kind of ruins, in a way, ruins people's time because they, you know, wait in line and whatever. So.
I feel like that's, you know, one of the responsibilities of the people at the convention is to have that stuff in order. But I also understand that it you know, it can get hectic, but there's also, I think, you know, with stuff like Anime Expo, it's the largest convention in the United States. So I feel like people should be prepared. Katsucon, I mean, like, it's an East Coast convention, so I don't really know so much of the logistics behind the convention, how much they, you know, maybe know slash understand how big they are. I mean, it seems like they have an idea because of what they've been doing with the gazebo, but
Definitely.
You hear stuff about convention staff and stuff like that, and I feel like it's important that people make sure that their staff behaves professionally and correctly, and because that does really affect people's convention experiences. And with how a lot of things went, I know a lot of people that are opting for MAGFest instead of KatsuCon next year.
Yeah, I mean, I hear that every year. I've been to KatsuCon since 2016, and I didn't go this year. So I went the last 3 years.
Yeah, that's a fair amount of time.
Yeah, and I feel like every year I hear that from folks that, like, oh, let's go to MAGFest instead because it's less people and it's actually 24/7 because the arcade room is always open. And I find that because it's right after the holidays, for me, it's been hard to like schedule to go there because, like, I need to go back to work, you know?
Yes.
And like, I can't just I could take an extended vacation, but it's one of those things where, you know, always at the end of the year, you always kind of like push stuff off until the next year because you're like, oh, well, it's holidays. Like, let's just push it to next year. And like for me, it's like, oh, gosh, I don't want to come back with like a ton of work. In some ways, I want to just go to work for a couple of days and like catch up on a bunch of emails and then just, you know, go from there. And and also, I guess with going in January, it's definitely a lot colder.
That's the thing, like, it's cold in February, but it'll be more cold in January.
I mean, not that you'll be going outside a whole lot because it's MAGFest is more of a gaming convention, so you go there to play you know, arcade and stuff like that. So it's you know, it's kind of and it depends on like what you're looking for, right? Because KatsuCon is more like, I can't say, I've never been to MAGFest. I don't know if it's a party con, quote unquote, or a photo shoot con, or like a cosplay con. Like, I don't think MAGFest is a cosplay con.
No, I heard that it's very less on the cosplay, but because of that, because Katsucon is so heavily focused on cosplay and photo shoots, some people like that. But, you know, there's, I'm sure you've dealt with it too, the competition for, you know, setting up spots and stuff like that. And I don't know if it was new this year, but when I was shooting with someone, con staff, we finished our shoot, thankfully, by the time that they come up to us. But con staff came up to us and they were like, no freestanding lights. Like, you have to take that down.
Oh, yeah.
And, excuse me. I heard they were policing people all the way up to the beach shore, which is kind of wild because that's outside. That's like not in the Gaylord. So that was a little crazy.
So I believe my understanding is that the that whole area is part of the Gaylord like resort. That's my understanding. That's
from,
from some of the like my experience with the staff. Like, I don't know about to the beach, like the beach itself, but maybe that walkway prior to the beach. Because, you know, they have the buildings that are, like,
like, around the area. I think the swimming pool is, like, kind of, like, in that courtyard area.
Right. So I feel like that's probably why they have that. And then also all the gardening area, like, that whole kind of yard in the front, that's probably theirs. So I think it, in some sense it makes sense. I just don't know where that line gets drawn as far as from a property standpoint. And so I can't really speak to that. But, yeah, I think 2016 wise, like, it wasn't as bad. Like, they weren't like policing the lights and all that stuff as badly or as strictly. And then from that point on, they were, because more and more people had, you know, heard about Katsucon being this convention where people bring the best cosplays and all that kind of stuff. So, and it's party con, so people do that. And then and they more and more people are coming, and so I don't think that's going to change. It's just that's kind of where it's at right now. But I guess with Katsucon being kind of like a smallish area relative to the amount of people that are going, did you think, like, from a, I'm curious, because, like, you know, we've been to AX for several years, and do you think AX is more packed than Katsu, like, from a standpoint of density, density wise? Or do you think it's like not about the same or whatever? You know, what do you think?
I definitely feel like they're very comparable. In all honesty, that's a really good question. Because in terms of like area to people scale, like Anime Expo gets really bad gridlocks. And they also have the heat going against them that makes people stressed.
Every
and
year.
I feel like that, that definitely contributes like against it, because everyone's so much more irritable when they're, you know, overheating. And Katsucon, though, like, I know for sure on the lowest levels in the connecting hallways between the Gaylord and the convention center, you could totally get gridlocked there. But I also feel like Anime Expo, I feel, tries to have some semblance of traffic control, because it's so huge, but Katsucon, I think, is too small to have. Or, you know, like, the rovers don't really put much effort, I guess, in traffic control as much as Anime Expo, so.
Yeah, definitely.
In that sense, and I feel like both conventions can be fairly similar when it comes to people, you know, pretty much shooting on top of each other, looking for spots to shoot. Everyone's always camping and sniping out potential shoot locations and stuff like that. I feel like they're fairly similar. The overall attendance might just be a fraction of what Anime Expo is, but, you know, when it does come to the area of the convention to people ratio, I feel like they're both hitting close to max capacity pretty similarly. I mean, that's why people would wake up at, you know, the times like 7 or 8 a.m., which
is insane, dude.
Super early. Yeah. Like, I don't think there's many other conventions where people get up that early, but people do that because they're trying to, you know, shoot at other locations when there's less people around because it's so packed. Yeah.
I mean, I barely wake up at like 7 for work. So forget just, you know, being ready at 7 to like shoot.
Exactly.
And stuff,
exactly.
I mean, so, and you've had a lot of experience like traveling outside of like the U.S. for conventions, right?
Outside the U.S. not so much. I want to travel outside of the U.S. for conventions, but I haven't gone to like any Asian conventions. I haven't been to Canada. The closest thing to an out of U.S. convention that I've been to was when I was a guest at Puerto Rico convention.
Was that, how was that? Because that seems pretty cool to me.
Yeah, it was, I mean, like, it was a really neat experience. Conventions in other places, because I think within the United States, the venues for conventions that we have tend to be, you know, like hotels or convention centers.
Right.
And that's pretty much it. But this one that I went to, which was AguadaCon, was held more so in like a coliseum. So that was interesting because it was like a big open circular room.
Oh, cool.
And since it was like a coliseum, we were kind of like in the pit area and there was like seating all around. But it was just like one big open area. The dealer's hall and artist alley that we would have is just one area. I had my booth on the side. There's a lot of, you know, food being offered, but it was just, you know, people in cosplay, and the rest of it was like fairly similar. People in cosplay walking around, looking at stuff, buying stuff. The seating areas, people would go up there and like sit. I think one of the big differences was that they had like an MC on their like front stage that was just kind of like talking and, you know, MCing the entire time. And he would tell people about, you know, things that were going on and like kind of walk around, and they had like their main stage happening. So everything was kind of happening in the same area. Whereas here, most of the time conventions are, you know, separated. Like sometimes you'll have the dealer's hall and artist alley like in one place. But then you had your main events in another place. There was, I believe, no like gaming area either, but it was just kind of, everything was like in one spot. So the layout and stuff like that was different. And
I see.
Hours wise, I mean, you know, different conventions have different hours. I think it started around like 10 or 11 a.m. and it went until 7 or something like that. Like a fairly comparable to other conventions that we have here.
Yeah, definitely. The hours wise, I wouldn't expect it to be too different. And what you did mention about having a MC kind of drive the event and like, you know, let people know there's certain events that are going on to kind of, you know, I guess have people go to that direction or whatever. That seems pretty different. And that actually from hearing other people that been to like AFA in Malaysia and Singapore or other like international conventions like Japan or China, whatever, it's more of that style, it seems like. And
oh, really? Even over there?
Yeah. I think I talked to somebody recently at Impulse, not this year, but I think last year or the year before, where Anime Impulse, which is a convention in Pomona, so the LA area. So Anime Impulse, they kind of have that sort of design and layout where, you know, everything's compacted into the one area there, and they have an MC or someone that's talking or entertaining the guests throughout the day. So have you been to Anime Impulse or?
I wanted to go this year. Yeah. The only thing that sidelined my plans for it actually was because I'd gone to Anime Los Angeles the weekend before.
I
was committed to coming back down for Anime Impulse, but there was the Nier Orchestra performance that was happening in LA like the middle of the week, the week after Impulse. So because I'm a NorCal resident, I don't want to go down to SoCal and I'm back up like three times within 3 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, how was that anyway?
The orchestra?
Yeah, the orchestra.
It was, it was really good. There were like, you know, like side things in real life happening at the same time that made the experience different than expected.
Yeah, a lot of Kobe fans.
Exactly. It was held at the Theater. So
the Marcel Theater. Got it.
Yeah. So we like walking over there also passed by all the Kobe Memorial stuff. So it was very packed with people paying their tribute to Kobe as well as a whole bunch of Nier cosplayers. So that was a little bit surreal. It's also my first time going to the Microsoft Theater for any type of event. And it was my first time being in that area without being at Anime Expo. So it was a very interesting experience because, because I'm used to being there when it's really, really hot in the middle of summer and there's cosplayers everywhere. So, I mean, it was still packed, which was familiar, but it was just like weird being there at a different time of the year.
Yeah, a lot of normal people, if you will.
Exactly.
It was, definitely, I'm sure you'll remember that for the rest of your life, probably. Yeah. Given the situation and given the event. And so that's why it's kind of like, wow. I did want to go, and I heard a lot of people really enjoyed it.
It was probably the best orchestral performance that I've been to. Not like I've been to particularly many, but I went to
Big Distant Worlds. There.
Yeah, I mean, bold words. It's not like I'm not like a connoisseur of orchestras, but like I've been to other video game orchestras.
Like Final Fantasy, Kingdom Hearts or something?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I went to Distant Worlds, the overall Final Fantasy one. I went to the Kingdom Hearts one, and I went to the Final Fantasy VII one last year. And even actually later today, I'll be purchasing my ticket for
3 p.m. people. Well, so by the time you guys will be hearing this, it'll be a week later. But so typically we release the streams on every Thursday. So make sure to book that on your calendar to listen in on Thursdays.
Yes.
But yeah, I have that on my calendar also to buy the tickets. I think later today at 3 p.m. But are you going to the San Francisco one or the L.A. one? I mean,
I want to go to both.
What?
I mean, the L.A. one's the first one. So
right.
I feel like they would drop some type of news. They always do. And I have a lot of friends, you know, in the L.A. area, like the ones that I went to the Near Orchestra with. We definitely wanted to go to the Final Fantasy VII Orchestra again. And you, of course. Yes. There's so many people.
For those who didn't know, Steph totally forgot I'm from LA. But
I was tired when we were talking about it. And I'm just used to people either being like LA or East Coast. And
I still love you. It's okay.
Thanks.
It's kind of crazy that they're having this. I mean, I'm not surprised that they're doing this. It's one of those things where, like, do you think it would be more hyped up if they dropped it like maybe a week or two after the game released? Versus a month or two later. Like, I mean, not that it I'm sure it'll still get sold out really quickly, but do you think people would be oh my God, this is crazy. I have to choose between playing the game or going to the concert.
Yeah, that's a really good thing to point out, actually. I feel like because there's, even though Final Fantasy VII is a classic, there's still some people out there that have never played the game or don't know what it's about. And I feel like dropping the tickets now, if they sell out, by the time the game comes out and people are like, I love this game. Maybe I heard there's an they'll go over and look and they're give me tickets. Other people will have already bought. Maybe. I mean, I don't know how large the venues are going to be.
Right. It is at the Microsoft Theater for the one in LA.
Okay. Yeah, is that bigger than, where was the other one that was? I don't know anything about venue sizes.
I think Microsoft Theater is pretty big.
For
what it is. Definitely how can house a lot of people. Miku concert, I think two years ago, they were there, but this year Miku is playing at the, the Shrine, which is different. But definitely Microsoft Theater is a very good, stage in general, and then has plenty of seats. So, I think it's going to be great. So if you're going to go to both, I'm jealous. I'm probably just going to go to the LA one, to be honest. But I'm going to enjoy it every moment. And
I can't wait
until the game comes out, actually. So
have you heard any of the new tracks from this game? Like how the way that they've kind of remastered older songs?
Only the trailer. I'm trying to keep away from as much material as I can just to kind of experiencing everything at once. And so I try to do that with movies or games that I
that's smart,
really want to enjoy for what it is rather than try to scrape everything off the internet and watch people data mine and this stuff. There's so much stuff.
I totally
out there.
Understand. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
So I think, were you pretty upset when they delayed the game?
Honestly, I wasn't that mad. I'm very patient. If anything, I was upset by the delay because of the new release date lands on SoccerCon weekend.
That's true.
I'm not going to SoccerCon anymore. because I'd rather stay at home playing game. It's cheaper, and I'm getting first class edition, which, you know, is like $300. Yikes. A lot of money.
Yeah.
But because I stream, I want to be at home streaming this game. So that's what I'm going to be doing. I don't know if there's going to be any release stuff or anything, but the way I see it is that, you know, the Final Fantasy VII Remake, the first episode of this only releases one. SoccerCon is going to be there every year.
Yeah, that's a very fair... I mean, that's a great assessment. It's just based on your priorities. So, I totally dig that. And for me, it's sort of like it actually is fine because the initial release day, I think it was like what, end of March or mid March or something.
The beginning of March.
March 3rd.
So it was supposed to be in like, what was it, like 2 weeks? Let me see now, because today, in like two weeks. Like week and a half. It was supposed to come out, but not anymore.
So for me, because it actually was better, I was actually happy because initially the release date would have conflicted with my trip to Japan. I'm going to Japan next month for like 3 weeks, for like the entire month of March, so I'll see all the all the Final Fantasy advertisements and stuff in person. I'm probably actually gonna go to the cafe, Final Fantasy Cafe.
I was about to ask if you would go.
I'm definitely going. So in a sense, it's like, I don't know if they'll have the stuff ready, obviously, by then. But, you know, I'm going to try to experience whatever I can while I'm there and then come back. But then I am planning to go to SoccerCon this year. So I won't be able to play it, you know, the weekend release, which is fine. I'm not like... You know, I already know what happens. You know, I don't want to put any spoilers out there. But if you haven't played the game, you should definitely play the game before.
I think so. Yeah, it'll be interesting seeing the difference.
Yeah, I mean, have you seen both trailers yet?
Yeah, I've been keeping up with the trailers and everything.
Got it. So the one that got me, or like, I'm surprised people haven't really memed out of it yet was the what's it called, when Cloud cross dresses and then you know, like they had like at the end right there, he was dancing with I forgot the guy's name, Don something or whatever, but
Don Corneo,
yeah, and then he was dancing with him, right? And then I'm surprised people weren't like memeing the 16-bit version of Cloud and the really realistic version of him. And then also, and then they made changes to both Tifa and Aerith.
Altered their costume designs.
Yeah.
A fair amount, which is really interesting. I feel like it makes sense because they have a fairly simplistic design.
The original one.
So I think that the updates and the subtle changes are fantastic. I love them.
Yeah. I think you did a cosplay of Tifa, right? Like that version.
Yes, I did.
But that was like based off of the OG version, right?
I did her original version. Are you asking about like the Wall Market design specifically?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Interestingly, I purchased a dress that was like Wall Market inspired for the Final Fantasy VII Orchestra, and it honestly seems to be like a fairly similar base dress design compared to her updated Wall Market outfit.
Yeah.
So I will probably be updating that dress to look more like her brand new dress.
Yeah.
Design. We just can't see the lower half of it, but
it's kind of crazy that like people like for cosplayers, right? You guys like have to find a lot of reference images, and trailers were really good for that because you could just, you know, pause whenever it's good, and then just kind of screenshot and base off your designs like that. And then I remember I forget which game, but I think it was a Square Enix game where I think they put out reference image like straight up like the character profiles. Was it Final Fantasy 15?
Yes. Final Fantasy 15, indeed. They had a character page for cosplayers, and they had like the renders of each of the characters like spread out, and they would remove layers of the clothing. I found that personally very useful because I had done an Aranea Highwind cosplay from Final Fantasy 15.
Yeah, I remember.
So that was very useful, in my opinion. I hope they do something like that for Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
I haven't seen or heard anything of it, but since they did do it for 15, I feel like they'll probably do it for 7. I hope so.
Yeah, because this is the next big entry for the Final Fantasy series after 15, yes. Which, you know, I think 15 came out late 2016. Mm.
Right? Yeah, it's been a minute. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while. And I know that game, man, that game was like 10 years of making or something.
Yes, or more, it was. Yeah, that went through developmental hell, to be honest, from what I heard. It's changed a lot since its original inception.
And then, did you play Kingdom Hearts 3 Remind?
Yes. You finished it. Finished the first part because I know there's technically three parts. Okay. So I finished the first chunk, but I need to finish the rest, which will take me a long amount of time. But I don't know. I might just go on YouTube to see the rest of it because the amount of work that I need to do to finish out the DLC is a lot.
Got it. Okay, so we won't talk about it, but there were some. I've already like seen all the stuff, so I was going to talk about it if you did play it or beat it already. So. There are some connections between, supposedly, Final Fantasy 15 and Kingdom Hearts, but I won't, but if you want to go search for it, you guys can go search for it online. It's on YouTube already. But yeah, I'm speaking of I guess gaming companies allowing you, giving cosplay references, how does one make a costume then, if you just eyeball it or eyeball designs, or how do you that? Like,
a lot of people have different approaches. There's a lot of math involved, at least in my experience, like geometry, the way that I do it.
Or what?
Yeah, well, just figuring things out. When I was constructing Tifa, there was so much math involved with standing in front of a mirror and kind of measuring from my shoulder to my torso, how long I wanted her tops to be, and measuring from my hips down my legs, how long I wanted her skirt to be, and measuring front portion of the skirt and all of that, and just calculating all of that out. And depending on what you do, there's so many different ways to tackle it. Since I sew primarily,
armor maker.
I've done armor making. It's really difficult and super duper in its own way.
So an RPG, if you were in an RPG, IRL RPG, right? So then you wouldn't be a blacksmith, you'd be a what do you call it, who, like, what's the class that makes the that just makes clothing
I mean,
I don't think there's a class
in an RPG.
For it, right?
There's no class for sewing, because that's just, you're just a seamstress. So
yeah, that's what it is, right? Seamstress.
Yeah, but that's not a class. I think in RPGs, the closest is there's blacksmiths, because they use anvils and hammers and stuff like that. I've seen in RPGs as weapons. But
I think Final Fantasy 14 has that mechanic though, you can be a blacksmith, you can make armor and stuff. Hopefully people that play it don't, hopefully you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was the case. You can have different skill sets. So fishing, for example, I remember playing that with leveling that skill. You can level different skills basically, and you can basically be anything. But with those types of skills, it's more of the social, not social aspect, but more the economy side, where you can create mats or create different items for you to sell or use. So,
interesting.
Yeah. So that was one of the unique traits of that game. So not to say that every game has a seamstress class, if you will, or a skill set. So, I was just curious because some people, certain cosplayers have different skill sets, like you mentioned. Some people are just great at making armor and armor only, or some people can do both, or some people can only do sewing or whatever. So then how do you deal with, for example, Tifa, right? She has some armor, minimal armor, but how do you do that? Do you commission it, or do you get a pattern and 3D print it, or what?
How it depends on like what you want to do. For me, there was someone that I was working with at the time that was able to tackle that project. But
gotcha.
For a lot of people, and for the most part, when I've been doing costumes in the past, like even though armor making and EVA foam isn't my strong suit, I consider it, you know, still part of the creative process of working on a cosplay. So even though EVA foam or foam smithing is not like my forte, I would still try it out just, you know, to see. Same with like wigs, like Aranea's wig, for example. That entire cosplay was really difficult because it was materials that I wasn't. Yeah, a lot of armor, and like the wig was really hard. And it's not my specialty or anything, but, you know, just because something isn't your specialty doesn't mean that you can't try, or, you know, if you want to make that sort of stuff, there's, you know, everyone starts somewhere when it comes to crafting. So it was just something that I made my best attempt at. And, you know, I remade Aranea's armor one more time. And that was like, all right. But, you know, every experience that you have with things that you're not very good at, I think paves the way for a much better attempt the next time that you do it. And, you know, you can, when you're first starting something, I think is almost more rewarding than you start getting decent at it, because the progress that you make when you first start out is like leaps and bounds, because there's so much to learn. So in that sense, sewing can be more difficult the better you get at it, because the amount of, once you start mastering basics, the advanced techniques, just, you know, there's so much more that you can do. There's so much that goes into it with fabric choices and fabric construction and all of that. That could be really difficult.
Do you think sewing, or like sewing specifically, is that a skill that is like easy to learn, hard to master, or is it just, you know?
Yeah, I would say so. Like basic sewing, I don't think it's as hard. No one taught me how to sew in the beginning. There's a lot of YouTube tutorials out there, but it's pretty much, you know, if you can make a duct tape form of yourself, you can trace that onto fabric. As long as you put seam allowance and then you sew, you can pretty much sew like anything, and it's easy to get better and better at it. But like you said, mastering it, I think, is fairly difficult, because there's a lot of factors that go into sewing that make it like really difficult, because you have fabric types. Once you start getting into the complexity of sewing machines, sewing needles, stitches, different machines like embroidery machines or sergers, ways to finish them, ways to like embellish your creation and stuff like that. Very crazy.
Yeah, I do remember someone mentioning that like mixing different types of fabrics can be difficult, because, you know, there are two different types of fabrics, and depending on where you place it on your body or what have you, it, you know, because of the properties, it could like make things hard or, you know, easy, depending on what you choose to use, I guess.
Definitely. And it's, I feel like it's also sort of something that comes with a lot of experience too, you know, depending on what you use. Like there was a project once where, the person really insisted on me using this specific type of material, because something that people get really hyper fixated on is the color of fabric versus the properties of fabric. So I had a project where someone really wanted this specific color with this certain type of fabric that just by touching it, I knew would be a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Because it was a very thin, kind of like slippery, like soft t-shirt kind of feeling material, and he wanted like a bodysuit made out of them.
But like soft. A tight
bodysuit. And it wasn't like quite so sturdy, and it was the sort of thing where it was like, I can make it work, but it'll be really difficult. So stuff like that. And I don't think it's like the greatest, you know, there's definitely like better material suited for like other things. You know, that's something that, you know, if they had sewn it, they would have learned through trial and error that there are better options. And the more that you get comfortable with different fabrics and stuff like that, I think you are choosing better suited fabrics. And I mean, I don't want to say that there's necessarily right or wrong when choosing fabrics, but there's definitely way better fabrics to choose for different.
Different situations, and like, you know, how it helps you build or craft a costume in this case. So the goal, and end goal, is to have a costume that sort of represents the character that you're trying to portray. And, you know, I've seen different variants of the same character And then like you mentioned, like some might have different like shades of that same color.
Yeah. But, and like, it's still all fantastic because that's how a person chooses to do it.
Exactly.
That's the fun of cosplays. You can take like a really simple piece and you can decide to swap it out for a more, you know, decorated fabric if you so choose. That is entirely within your creative freedom.
Yeah. So once you've had, okay, so once you crafted your cosplay,
yes,
you do a test fit. And then once that's good,
if you have time, you do a test fit. If you have time,
we're kind of giving the audience or people that are listening like the ideal situation. If you have the time, you could do a test fit. You can make adjustments on the fly and whatnot. So once you do that, and you know, we're not going to really cover makeup in this segment, but so the question I have is, how long does it take you to get ready on average?
For most of my cosplays, ballpark around, I mean, if I'm showering and everything in the morning, 2 hours.
Minimum. Or is that, you know?
Average
wise, minimum, like,
probably like an hour and a half-ish. Because I know for me, I've gotten my makeup down to mostly like 30 to 45 minutes. And then putting on the costume, it doesn't matter how fast you try to go. It's always a while, you know, like my Tifa cosplay, she's super easy and simple to put on, honestly, but she still takes a bit of time getting ready. I do specific makeup and stuff for her, and then putting everything on and just making sure everything's okay. And I think part of it too is making sure my bag is packed is something that I never factor time in for, in terms of getting ready.
Oh,
because I always want to make sure, like, I have my badge, my wallet, and I have any snacks, any, you know, like spare bobby pins or like a cosplay repair kit that I'm carrying around. Because I always carry a bag around with me, but I always make sure that my bag's packed. Or, you know, like while you're in the middle getting ready, so depending on who you're rooming with, if you're cosplayers, you'll also take time to help them as well. But so those things factor into like my personal getting ready cosplay time.
Wow, but I had no idea. Yeah. I mean, that's a small detail too. Yeah. That's really a small detail that, like, I mean, I never, like, I don't have that problem personally, because I try to organize that stuff the night before. For example, like if I'm at a con, I'll, like, if I know I'm shooting certain things, like if I need a certain light or whatever, I'll have that stuff prepped. Or if I need to charge my batteries, I'll charge my batteries the night before.
That's smart.
You know, like that kind of stuff. So that way you're not like trying to rush. Yeah. Because if you're rushing, you're kind of like not thinking really. You're kind of just thinking about rushing. And then thinking about that rushing, then you're not really thinking about, you know, what you actually need to prepare for, whatever it is. So, that's a small detail. And this, it's funny because that's not even related to the costume or anything in itself, or makeup. It's just like a pure logistical thing. Like, make sure you have a wallet, keys, badge, like whatever. Yeah. Like water,
just making
whatever.
Sure you're prepared. I mean, I always double check. Like, my bag is always like relatively packed for most of the weekend, but it's like I always want to double check just in case, you know, like I took out my hotel room key for whatever reason and lent it to someone, you know, the previous night they wanted to grab something around the corner and I lent them my room key. You know, I just want to make sure everything's set so that there's no hiccups later in the day.
Gotcha.
Or, you know, there's other like small things, but that stuff, mostly I just want to be prepared for. I do know through my experience rooming with other people too that, I mean, I, for the most part, always make sure that I have my cosplay finished by the time that I get to the convention, period.
Oh, man, that is a mess.
Sometimes some people are still finishing their cosplays some in the hotel room. So I feel like, in that sense, depending on people and getting ready, like, at a convention, sometimes they have to finish their cosplay the morning of and then finish it. So, I mean, in those terms, I'm not sure how those people would say it takes them to get ready in cosplay, because again, that's like not them getting ready in cosplay, but that's them finishing their cosplay to put it on. So I don't know if that would necessarily even factor into the time of
how
long getting a costume, because they got to finish their costume first.
Yeah. But I've definitely seen my fair share of people, you know, lagging it, if you will.
Con crunching in the hotel room with their portable sewing machine.
Oh man. I feel like that's like a common theme of people like add it. And it definitely doesn't help your mental state to like add this type of stress at all.
Yeah, people are stressing out the morning of finishing the costumes. I feel like that's something that honestly came to be a little more glamorized in recent years that I really wish wasn't. The idea of con crunching and suffering together, but, you know.
It's kind of like a bond that people, like, can relate to, but then it's not necessarily something you want to be in the first place.
It's just like, I don't know. That just seems kind of, like, silly to me. Yeah. I mean, it's silly, I think, because you don't have to subject yourself to con crunch.
Correct.
Like, con crunch is something that's entirely avoidable, but...
some people,
you know, due to bad planning, like some people do that.
Right. Time management, yeah.
But it's the thing that gets weird about it is that because a bunch of cosplayers con crunch, it happens. But the weird thing about it, I think, to me, is like the glorification of con crunch.
Right.
I knew someone at one point that was mad at a mutual friend of ours at the time because she didn't con crunch because she could manage her time, and this other person was actually like, you know, you haven't suffered like the rest of us, so do you deserve, like, enjoying the convention? And it was so bizarre because it was like, weird. I mean, anyone, you know, we all deserve, just because she has better time management than, like, me or this other person.
Right.
Doesn't mean that she enjoys the convention any less because she didn't suffer for it. It's super strange.
But it's kind of like that association that, like you mentioned, this is part of the, you know, if you go to conventions, this is part of that quote-unquote con life that you have to experience, almost like it's something that you have to experience in order to kind of get the full experience, which is, I mean, in a sense I can see why they would think that, but again, it's a negative experience. Like, it's not something that you want to
necessary.
Yeah, it's not something, I don't think it's something that you want to continually to experience, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree.
Which is, but like you said, it's glorified, and, you know, hopefully people can get a better, you know, sense of their time and how to manage it better. Because this stuff doesn't just, you know, apply to cosplay, right? It applies to kind of everything
in life,
in your life. So it's like, if you don't time manage your, like, life better, then you're going to be late for everything. And, like, that's just going to affect you negatively and all the people around you, actually. So once you're done con crunchy, once you're out of the door, out of the hotel room, do you have any, like, tips for photographers or for other people that are taking your photo, like anything that they should do or ask that would help everybody in that sense? Like, for example, I'll say, like, asking for a photo before you take it, that's pretty, you know, pretty straightforward, I think. Do you have any, like, things that help maybe photographers specifically? Like, I can
I guess, I mean, that's a really interesting question. Do you mean for, like, hall shots or, like, photo shoots?
Just in general. You have anything that applies to both or either or, it doesn't, you know, this is just, like, you know, I think that it would help a lot of photographers just to get an idea of, okay, if I'm shooting with someone, whether it's a hall shot or whatnot, like, what can I do to improve the experience or improve, you know, the photos that I get back or what have you. So, like, I try to think of things like, okay, well, if I see that their wig is, like, kind of falling off, or, you know, even if it's, like, for example, if it's, like, obviously falling off, I'll be like, hey, like, you know, can you fix your wig's kind of like turning sideways or whatever, can you fix it? Or, you know, there's hair in your eye, like, can you, like, move it or whatever? Things like that, that's why I think of, for the most part, like, wigs. Because
I would agree with that. I think, like, the cosplay in general, as much as you can, if you see anything that seems, like, a little bit off, I personally think it's always a good idea to, like, point it out to the cosplayer and be like, oh, hey, like you're saying, like, your wig, or, like, if, you know, they're wearing something and, like, something's kind of, like, flipped the wrong way. Or, like, not centered. And if it happens to be something that you catch, I think, because everyone in that situation wants to have a good photo, I think it's worth pointing it out. I guess, in general, just kind of being understanding of if the cosplayer is, like, rushing somewhere. A lot of this, too, is just kind of, like, it's a two-way street, so hopefully the cosplayers are being receptive as well. You know, because sometimes I think cosplayers can be you know, some might be like snobby and like saying no for like photos, but for the most part, if they're like receptive and stuff like that, I think it's good to communicate. You know, and if you need to move the cosplayer to a location with better light too, I think it's good to ask and communicate. You know, like if you ask for a hall shot and it's like they look really like yellow and like gross, I don't think it hurts to, you know, let them know like, oh hey, like the lighting here is really bad, I was wondering if we could move over to, you know, like this location over here, I think the lighting will be a little bit better. The only downside with that is that, you know, like if they're busy and they're just trying to grab like a hall shot, they might say no, but I think for the most part, you know, like people will be take that second to move over just so that you can get a better shot, because to my understanding, most cosplayers would want, you know, a good photo of them taken versus a bad one. So yeah, I think most people would be receptive to that sort of
thing. Yeah, definitely. And that's good. You know, that's definitely some good pointers, if you will. Excuse me. Just to ask, basically ask for permission. If you have any ideas, definitely just ask. If you, like you mentioned, if they're in a bad lighting, you're like, oh, this. Oh, excuse me, man. If you're bad lighting, just, you know, ask them if, oh, hey, can we move over there or whatever? Like you already mentioned. So then, you know, you get photos good for you. And then it's great for the cosplayer because they get a good photo of their hard work, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, and like, that's the thing. So,
yeah.
And everyone wants the same thing.
And then, like, I guess talking about photographers and working with them, like, do you, like, I guess from your experience, right? Because my experience has only been, you know, working with different cosplayers. So I can, I can talk about like different experiences, good or bad with them. But then, you know, I don't, it's not like I actually talk to too many cosplayers that like ask them like, oh, what's been your experience with photographers over the, you know, time you've been a cosplayer, and like what things that they do differently, variances and things that, you know, we could all learn as photographers or as people to, kind of better the experience, if there's any like good points or things that we shouldn't do, things we should do type of thing. So,
I mean, like for me, most of my experiences thankfully have been, you know, largely positive when it comes to photographers.
Yeah.
I think most photographers, at least like the more serious, like experienced ones that have been doing it for a while, I think, you know, most of them kind of get the etiquette, I guess might be the word, of being like a cosplay photographer. I think it's like a lot of people that are new aren't really sure what like the rules and stuff are.
Like for example, like if like for me, I always like for example, so I'll reach out to them if, hey, like I saw this cosplay, you're going to this con, can we, you know, shoot or whatever, and then we figure out the time and date, and then during the convention, you know, or during the shoot or what have you, then we do the shoot. And then, you know, then I kind of, I try to explain like what my process is. Like, so in my, like for me, it's, you know, I'll upload the raws so that you could see them. And then, you know, then you get to pick out like, I don't know, however many photos, depends on what it is really. And then,
I like stuff like that personally. Everyone has a different creative process, but definitely like during the shoot, I think it's always good to show the cosplayer the shots that you're getting throughout the shoot. Because I think that live feedback is really important to work with the cosplayer on the shots. A lot of it kind of depends on the person, I guess, too. But I personally find it useful because maybe there could be little things that the cosplayer wants to fix, like maybe they think that that pose is unflattering or like something like that, that they're catching when they see themselves that the photographer doesn't necessarily notice. So I think that's really useful. Post photo shoot, I know I personally prefer, like I think it's good to like see like all the photos and kind of figure out ones that look good. But I know, cause I worked a lot with like a photographer who did that sort of thing too, but like that can get difficult if you have like 200 shots.
Definitely.
You're trying to pick out, you know, like 20, only like, you know, 10%, but it can be really tedious and time consuming going through as well.
Imagine so, that's our life basically. After every con, you know, we get like, say like someone has like 1,000 photos and you're like, oh crap, I gotta go through 1,000 photos of like, you know, variants of the same shots, if you will, and then kind of filter out what's good. And I try to do that as much as possible. I'll try to filter out, like, you know, test shots or shots that are like too overexposed or underexposed, to just give the person like as much choices as possible without overwhelming them with, you know, multiple shots of the same thing. Now, what I find interesting is that, like you mentioned, everyone has kind of like their different preferences. So some people prefer, like you mentioned, like a, more of a filtered set, if you will. Yes. And then others, they don't mind it. And they'll like, give me everything that you got. Like, I want to see it all. Like, no secrets. Like, I'm like, oh, okay. So I typically try to ask, like, hey, like, this is what typically do.
Yeah.
Is this cool? Like, and then, you know, they'll say yes or no. And then depending on the answer, I'll go from there. Mm-hmm. And then afterwards, So
I think that's really good because, I mean, like, I know that a lot of different photographers, they have different preferences where, you know, some photographers don't want to give out all their, you know, the raws or whatever, or they'll give out samples.
Yeah.
But I know that, like, sometimes cosplayers can be super rude with that stuff and just kind of, like, take it and edit it themselves.
Oh, yeah. Happens all the time.
Yeah, which is, like, so silly. I feel like there should be, like, standardized etiquette understood between cosplayers and photographers of things.
Right.
That are done and not done to make the process easier.
It is what it is.
Unfortunately. But I think that's really good that you communicate with people after, you know, especially like after you do photo shoots and stuff like that, to let them know what to expect. I think that's really good. Any and all communication about the creative processes that photographers do, I think, help. I think I'm fairly laid back when it comes to working with photographers. Like, some people can be very impatient when it comes to getting photos back and stuff like that.
My fair share of those experiences.
People can be really demanding. What would you say, my question for you, is like the typical... is it different for every photographer? I'm assuming it is, but like the typical turnaround time for shoots that you do at a convention, like what is your goal time and do you have like an actual time? Are they different?
That's a great question because I think a lot of people don't, I mean, because they're not necessarily photographers or they have other things in life, or they're not like, so like you mentioned, you're a cosplayer, right? So you don't necessarily know what it's like. So typically like after the convention's over, I go home, I upload the cards to my computer, I back them up because I back up all my stuff. All my stuff is in a backup area on the hard drive. So it's like a mirrored backup. So if my hard drive dies, I still have a backup of it. So I back up, I think the last 3 years of all my photos,
every photo.
So I'd actually spend money like on buying the hard drives and memory and all this stuff and have cloud storage online, So people that pay for the services, like my, they get that, right? So all the photos are there for the last 3 years, I think. And then it starts rotating, but
I see.
I don't think everyone does that. I think very few people actually do that, at least in the convention scene, con scene, if you will. So I do that. And then in the next day or two, I typically upload all the photos. Like I take one day or so to filter all the photos and then upload them to the cloud. And then I start sending out messages. Hey, like, here are the photos. Can you help me pick out ones that you like? And they go ahead and do that. And so now that kind of factors into turnaround time because depending on their schedule, right?
Yeah.
Like if they get back to me right away, I'll start editing them. And so it's really first come, first serve in the sense that like whoever gets back to me first, they kind of get first dibs, right? Because it's like otherwise I'm just sitting here doing nothing in a sense. And after that, it takes for me, I give myself about a week, 1 to 2 weeks typically to return photos because So I work full time. And sometimes I'm working overtime. So I try to give myself a little buffer so that I still have time to like, for me to like relax and just like reset every week. Now, as far as like, so the thing is, you know, I'll shoot with my friends and then I'll take paid shoots, right, with different clients. So for me, it's always like been the client, people that pay always go first, no matter what. I don't care who you are.
Yeah,
I don't care who you are. So it's like, you know,
so that's the way it should be, I think, especially because, you know, that's a business transaction. So obviously, right. I think that should definitely take priority, no matter what.
Yeah. And unfortunately, you know, that does not apply to every photographer. I can't speak for other photographers or whether they do that or not. And I know personally that that's not the case for some. And so, I don't, you know, do that. I take that very seriously because that's kind of a messed up thing to do, from a business standpoint. So, so that typically is the turnaround process, like the process I go through. There's always like turnaround time is more of just like a, here's what you can expect. There's details of that because like, sometimes I've had, instances where I'll edit, what I'll try to do is I'll try to edit like a couple photos and I'll send it and say, hey, how does this look? Or if it's quick enough, I'll just do all of them. And then I'll do the same thing. I'll say, hey, how does this look? Let me know, like, if you have any feedback so that I can make adjustments. If there's something that like I didn't, that it wasn't like, say like lighting was weird or like it didn't, it, you know, made their skin look a little bit like too pale or like too yellow or too whatever. They can have that feedback. We can have that conversation. But obviously that kind of like affects the, turnaround time, right? Because it's like, well, turnaround time in a sense, like in my definition, it's like, oh, that's the turnaround. That's the time I expect to, for me to give you the photos, but you still have to like, approve them. Like you still have final say of like, of sort of the, yes, this is good, this is not good or whatever. So, I try to give people as much, choice in the creative process as much as possible and freedom to say whatever they can and whatever they want. So
I think that's really good because then it really feels like a collaborative process,
right?
So
a lot of people, you know, some other people, they like to edit themselves, they like to edit too. So like I'll make agreements with them, say, hey, okay, I'll do the color and lighting, you can do the retouching, that's cool, like, or I can do all of it, it's up to you really. If you feel like you can do it, go for it. Like, it's, you know, especially if you're a paying customer, like I'm not gonna tell you no, like
what goes
right. So I think those are the kind of things that I like my experience has been, and like I kind of learned all this stuff kind of just through the years of doing photography. So, there's definitely similarities between like, you know, working like from both our perspectives. It's like, it's based on individual, but then there's certain things that kind of apply to, every person that you would work with. So, and it's, hopefully, you know, people that are listening to this will get a better idea, understanding of how it is being a cosplayer, being a photographer, and how to basically better the experience for everybody. And and then also like we mentioned like how to cosplay, how to craft the cosplay in a sense, or like what the experience is like, and then con experience. And then, I guess we have a little bit more time. Maybe a few minutes or a couple minutes. What are you working on now, or what's your next con, and what's new? What's coming up for you?
So like I mentioned before, I'm not gonna be a con. So my next convention in that case is FanimeCon. So I have, you know, like a 3-month break, which is a pretty sizable break, I think, until my next event. The cosplays that I want to work on, honestly, I want to do Yennefer's alternative outfit from The Witcher 3.
Which is like a
DLC outfit. I've been super into The Witcher lately because I started playing the game and then the Netflix show came out and then I started reading the books. So there's that. I do also want to make A2 from Nier Automata at some point.
Oh wait, you never cosplayed A2?
I have done like casual versions of her. I wore her to the orchestra, but I've never like made her cosplay. So that's something that I'd like to do. So those are kind of my next projects. Other than that, it's mostly just working on commissions and streaming like I have been. So
So where can speaking of streaming, so where can people find you? So Twitch, imagine?
My Twitch handle is twitch.tv/Stephanie, my full first name, underscore Stone, last name.
Cool.
So
And then people mostly can find you on like Instagram, Twitter, or
I have like a good handful. I have Instagram for sure, which is at StephStoneCos, Cos, COS, short for cosplay. My Twitter is the same handle as that. I'm fairly active on both of those. I also have a YouTube channel where I last year was uploading a bunch of like quick, like 5 minutes or less videos of me talking about random topics. I have a couple tutorials on there. This year I've been uploading my gameplay footage from Twitch onto YouTube. That's just Stephanie Stone. That's pretty much it, I think, for like
I'll link all the stuff in the description of the podcast. But you know, for people that are listening, this is where you can check her out. All the socials will be again in the description below, but thank you Steph or Stephanie for joining us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you guys for listening. We're gonna try to continue this, and if you have any suggestions, please send it over to my handles, which will always be below in the description again. See you guys next time.
Bye, thank you.